What kind of cheer did you have in mind?
Wrestle, wrestle, twist them like a pretzel.
What was the cheer our friend Taylor does?
Oh, she goes,
slant that B dot that I curve that C-T-O-R-Y. So I'm a little low vibe today, and I'm trying to bring the heat here on the edge.
I brought the heat with some hot coffee.
I know,
you just reminded me that drinking coffee at 5, almost 6 p.m., I'm going to be fucked.
We should have just gone straight for the wine.
I know.
I mean, hate
well,
to
then
be
it would have been a bad, bad scene, I think.
A slurry bad scene. Yeah. I think the people love that from us.
Well, let's get the wine out then.
Good God.
You got any caffeinated wine?
I do not have caffeinated wine, but they should invent
they should
that. That's
that.
Actually an interesting concept.
No, that's like bad for alcoholics to like be like, they need to hit that
They're
wine.
They're like, woo! It's like having a Red Bull vodka.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
So people do create that. You're just trying to put it
but
all
like
in one
nobody's
can.
Drinking a Red Bull vodka for breakfast.
That's
maybe.
That's
maybe.
Disgusting.
I'm
anyway.
I'm just going to drink this late night coffee.
Okay. Chip, report back on how late you're up. So
slurp, slurp.
We were just talking about, I was like, oh, what's my update going to be? I went to the beach 2 weekends in a row, which feels super like privilege. I can't believe I got to do it. But we had that bachelorette party. Mm-hmm. And then I had Labor Day. We were supposed to be at Seven Peaks, that music festival, which got canceled. So some friends just kind of scheduled this little beach trip to distract us from the sadness of that and trying to not focus on COVID for 1 second and whatnot. And it was really fun and great to be at the beach. And that was sort of all that's going on in my life. Like, it feels a little like lackluster, except that I've really gotten into a couple shows.
You're a couch potato these days.
Well, I mean, ish, not really, but I'm just like sort of, I don't know, riding the wave of all the shit going on maybe. And you know,
need
I had
an escape.
Yeah. And so I had those two trips, which kind of could lead into like the privilege aspect. You know, I've been watching the show White Lotus. We were talking about that. You and I have a little bit of mixed reviews about this. But if you haven't watched White Lotus, it's a really, really good show, in my opinion. Is it on HBO Max?
It is. Yeah, I think it's HBO.
HBO. Max. So it's a little tougher to get to, but I had to get HBO Max since they started filming the Sex and the City reboot because I was like, oh, I can't miss a minute. but anyway, so I've been watching it and it's all about white privilege, right? And like when you hear about white privilege, I think I've been talking about this a little bit. Like I'm starting to understand the concept more of how I've grown up with privilege and it was not even on my radar. And there's just a lot of awarenesses that have happened for me around this the last year. But watching a show about it and seeing these characters and going, I know that character. Oh, there I am. Or there's something that happened is
right.
Actually the most disgusting and disturbing experience that I've felt in a while. Not in a bad way, though.
They're like, all it's despicable like, characters. Like,
you don't
hate
like
them
any
all.
Of the characters, yeah. Which I'm not like selling the show in a great way right now. But the truth is it sucks me in because I'm very much like feeling this learning experience happening again, because the stuff that we just don't even think about, like there's so many characters that remind me of certain experiences in my life, like that either I have been under the you know, or I've been operating under that mentality, or like the things that I've gotten upset about, but I have not really understood why I was upset. Like there's a lot about white male privilege that triggers me in the show. And I'm like, oh my God, but that has really been an issue of mine with men for a long time. And I'm kind of uncovering some of that stuff in my own personal life. But like, it is seeing it on the show has been like, oh, that's why it bothers me. Cause it is fucking privilege.
Yeah.
Like it is like, it's not treating human beings with decency and respect, like other humans, even other white humans. It's just like operating from a place of, I am entitled to this,
right.
And I deserve this. And it's just so gross to see in all in one place.
Yeah. I mean, and like I'm going to try not to do any spoilers, but I mean, it takes place on an island where the land has basically been stolen from the natives.
Correct.
And the only natives that you see are ones that work at the hotel.
Right.
Most of which are the ones who like do like native dances.
Does it affect it to say where it is?
It's in Hawaii.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
I don't think it
I feel like you're
it's
being
in Hawaii.
So
yeah. I guess I was just picturing it and wasn't realizing, like, I wasn't painting a clear picture. But yeah, it takes place in Hawaii. And it's like, you know, like the only Hawaiians you see are like work at the hotel.
Yeah.
And most of them are like dancing at dinner,
doing like hula dances.
Yeah. And it's just a stark reminder of the fact that, you know, white people have gone in and just like trounced all over everything. Mm-hmm. And like you touched on this, like the characters are despicable.
Yeah, I don't really like any of them.
It is beautifully shot. The story is pretty riveting. It like starts with like a hook. I'm going to give away the very beginning because it doesn't give any... This is going to tell you why you need to watch it. Like, it basically starts in an airport and there's this like older white couple sitting across from like a young sort of handsome guy who's by himself.
He was in The Office. Do you know that?
No.
I loved him in The Office. He's a really good actor because I fucking hate him in this show.
Oh my God, he's despicable.
Yeah.
But they're like asking him questions and he said that he's coming back from his honeymoon and they're like, well, where's your wife? And he says something like, why don't you mind your own fucking business? And then it cuts to, you see a casket being loaded onto the plane.
Right.
And then it's like white load. It goes back like 1 week ago or something. So you have no idea whose casket this is.
Well, see, when
so you, it hooks you. You're now I got to know who died.
You told me that story when we were at the bachelorette party and I was like, well, is it his wife?
I mean, that's what you assume because she's then, not sitting there.
Well, right. But then it gets into the show and you're like, wait, I have no idea who's in that casket. So that, just to give that disclaimer too, we're not giving anything away. And then it's just like the stories and it's all these different versions of it, right? Like that kid you're talking about is this rich white male. And it's like he's on his honeymoon. Then there's a family. I think the kids are so interesting to watch in that family dynamic because...
And they bring their friend who has... they bring a friend who's a person of color who is is the only guest at the hotel that we experience.
Yes.
That is a person of color.
That's not white.
Yes.
Correct. And... Just the dynamic with that, I feel like they really touch on what's happening in our culture right now with like kids and technology and just even all of the different programming that's coming in now. And some of it's really good, right? Like as far as gender identity and all of those topics, it touches on all of them. And so I think it's like, it's just a super fascinating concept to look objectively at our society. It's like almost like having like an out of body experience and you're looking down and you're like, oh my God, all of this is happening in my day to day all the time. And we're kind of just unaware of it. And so I think that's why I'm so sucked in. Like, it's fascinating. I think I only have like an episode and a half left. But then I started also, because I'm just like really into TV right now, I guess.
That's what you do at the beach when you're like burnt and tired.
It was what I did when I got back because I'm exhausted.
Right.
So I know white lotus problems.
Tired from the beach, your trip to the beach.
Tired from my two beach trips. Wah, wah, wah. But so I started 9 Perfect Strangers last night.
It's so good.
Oh my God. Like, I literally, when you walked in, I'm like, can we record this? Because I like I can't wait to get to it. It's just like right up my alley. First of all, I love Nicole Kidman. Mm-hmm. I think she's an amazing actress.
A lot of people are like complaining about her accent.
Oh, really? I like it. She's Russian in the show.
She's Russian, but it does kind of come in and out.
Yeah. I mean, I get that.
But it's like, I think it's meant to be slightly Russian.
Well, also, that's just a hard thing to do.
It's really hard. Apparently, she stayed in character for like 6 months.
Are you serious? Yeah. Ugh, I don't understand how people do that. Like, she has kids. How does she talks to her kids that way?
Masha.
Wow. Well, it's based on a book. Mm-hmm. And it's basically like a retreat. Again, you can kind of tie white privilege into some of this stuff, but it goes into watching these 9 strangers go to like a mind body kind of place that ends up being a little more intense. I mean, I'm only on episode 2, so I can't even really speak to it. But Nicole Kidman is this healer, and she's all these healers around her, and like literally they go in and they're thinking they're going to just get like a bunch of massages and just do like this wellness drink and all this stuff.
Like, and someone went because he just wanted to go to the most expensive spa.
Right. Like a spa, like there's hot springs and all of this stuff. And literally within meeting them for the first second, she calls out their shit. Like, they're hardcore. Like, you're an alcoholic drug addict.
I love how rich the characters are.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And they all, like, I haven't even gotten to all their stories yet.
Yeah.
But they also really tap into every different dynamic that, you know, especially on this like social media culture that we live in, where we're all painting these pictures of this life. But like, there's always a story that's really going on behind it. And what is the truth? And what is the truth of us that we even deny, you know, like what are we not in touch with in ourselves?
Yeah.
And it's just so good. Like it's all really of the, Melissa McCarthy is in it. There's just like all these great actors. Mm-hmm. What can
Luke Evans is in it.
Which one is he?
He's the gay one.
Oh, yeah.
I guess that's the best way to describe him.
Yes.
Regina Hall is in it.
Yeah, Regina Hall.
She's so good in it, too.
She's so good. The guy with the beard is somebody, too, but yeah, I can't think of him.
I recognize him from a lot of things, but I don't know his name. He's fantastic abrasive. In it, too.
He's so good. Anyway, two highly recommended shows, White Lotus and Nine Perfect Strangers. And that is the update I have for you guys this week.
Well, I'm gonna say a few things to speak to that a little bit.
Please do.
My friend told me that I need to watch White Lotus like a month ago, month and a half ago.
Yes.
And I'm like on the second episode and I texted her and I was like, I'm so tense and I hate these people. Why am I watching this? And she was like, I don't know, but you just have to. And it's like, it is so beautifully shot. Like if for any reason, like if you have any cinephiles out there that like watch this, like just watch it for like the
cinephile. What word did you just say?
Cinephile, like is people that like, love movies.
Oh, I didn't know that was a thing.
And
sounds perverse.
She learns something every day. Look at how I'm holding the mic. Like I've got my pinky up, like I'm holding a glass of wine. So I digress. It's really beautifully shot. So if anyone loves like that kind of stuff, just beautiful cinematography, watch it for that. I fucking hated the characters. I did love, I can't remember the actor's name, but the guy who played plays the manager that's kind of a mess.
Oh, he's such a mess.
He's
and
so
I love
good.
It too. Yeah.
One of the problems that I really had with it was in one instance in particular, they lost the plot a little bit there is a black woman. There's a character that's played that is a black woman, mm-hmm. and she falls prey to the promises of a rich white woman. And that drove me a little crazy because I felt like it was just like her character to me was wise beyond her years, you know? And I'm like, she wouldn't have fallen for this bullshit anymore. Like, women like her age are like...
No, see, I disagree. Because I think it's like...
I don't know. I feel like she's been burned enough that she would have smelled
this
coming a mile away.
But then the other thing, though, is like sometimes I think it taps into so many like things that we like. I can relate to this in dating. Like you want to buy into the dream of something, and so sometimes you might ignore red flags.
Yeah, there's
or
hypnosis
like,
in it. Yeah, I
yeah,
get that.
Yeah, like you like look at the possibility, even, you know, or like what it could be, and if it's hitting a nerve in you that taps into some sort of dream, I think you can get sucked in really easily. So that's what I saw happening in that capacity. Because like also I sort of bought in. Like I haven't seen how it plays out, so I don't know. But yes, that really bothered you because you brought that up
to
me.
It really bothered
me.
I just wish like they could have made a small tweak and she could have been Native Islander because that still would have made sense. She also could have just been a white employee and it still would have made sense.
You thought they missed the mark because she was black?
Because she was black. I just felt like, because there was a fierceness to that character.
Totally.
And I'm like, she's too
powerful.
Smart.
Powerful.
Yeah, she's powerful. I was like, she's too smart. Like, she wouldn't have fallen for this. So that drove me a little bit crazy because I feel like I've read a few, you know, critics that have pointed that out too. And I'm just like, when you make a mistake like that, it defeats the purpose of some of the other stuff that you were nailing.
Yeah. So I can't speak to it because I don't know how it plays out. And I also don't want to give spoiler alerts.
Okay. So the other thing that just hearing you say the word white privilege, which, you know, obviously I am a beneficiary of and recognize, I think one of the reasons why white people in particular have a hard time like wrapping their head around the concept of it is simply the word privilege. Because there are a lot of disadvantaged white people. I feel like there needs to be a new term.
Okay.
That's like, I just looked up synonyms, like white benefit.
Yeah.
You know, the benefit of being white.
Yeah.
White entitlement.
Yeah.
You know, like.
I mean, I wonder if that would help people with it a little
To me, it makes it a little bit more clear, like white benefit.
But isn't it like privilege that we're even trying to like change the word?
Totally. But
we're like, I'm uncomfortable with that.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, like, I'm perfectly uncomfortable in my white privilege. I just want other fucking white people to get it. You know? So like, that's why I think that there needs to be some sort of change. Like, but you're right. Like,
but that
if
again,
I were non-white
whole...
and I were listening to this, they'd be like, fuck you. Like, no.
It's what it is.
Yeah,
bitch.
Figure it out. Yeah.
So sorry, you're offended. Yeah. I'm so sorry. I think it's, that's the point.
Offended is not what I'm worried about. Stupid is what I'm worried about. You know, like
can't change stupid.
Yeah, you can't change stupid. And that's the problem, is like they're the ones that are the fucking, you know, they're the sand in our, you know.
Well, I think
sails.
This is a time, and we've said this again, like, and I always get nervous talking about these topics because it has been such a heated issue in the last year, just because I know I don't know everything,
right.
But all I can do is just keep trying to learn and understand more. I was even thinking about the privilege that I have in my life where I expect an Uber in a certain amount of time. And if I don't get it, I'm fucking pissed.
Right.
And it's like, it takes 20 minutes. And
right.
That I'm like, 20 minutes? You know, like we now live in such a society where we literally expect instant gratification on all things. And like, that is privilege.
Yeah.
Like, first of all, our lives didn't used to be that way. But also, like, now that it's become our thing we're accustomed to, the fact that it's sort of shifted like out of that during COVID and stuff, I'm finding myself completely irate at ridiculous topics
or lost. Yeah. It's
like, oh my God, if I lost my cell phone, I don't even have a clock.
People
have
who have like
clock.
Their like cell phone cases also where their ID and their credit cards and money. I'm like, that is the biggest recipe for disaster. Why don't you put your car keys in there while you're at it? You know what I mean? It's like,
why don't you put your diabetes medication?
Right. Any life-saving medication.
Just in one.
Yeah, it's like.
Well, I was having a conversation with a friend at the beach about this, and he made a really good point because he was like, the interesting thing, though, is like in our society, it's being so pointed to white people right now, which I think is fair. You know, like we've had a run for a really long time in America that it's just unequal. And so I can see why that's happening here. But, and this is very true, he made the point. He was like, I think it's just privilege in general, because so many other countries would look at any American. And the fact that like I've done work in Haiti before where we've like built houses and stuff. And like we built a cinder block house for this woman. And I've never seen someone literally go into convulsions because she was so grateful to have actual walls and a roof. And it was made out of cinder blocks. It was nothing glamorous. It was like, I'm making that. So like, you know,
Kelly built that house.
Yes. You know, it is not like super fancy.
Cute.
But the point is she was so grateful to be out of a tent where her daughter, like, and she had such a risk of being raped every night. Like,
right.
Can you fucking imagine
right.
that? Like, or the fact that like we all drive cars here, or like a lot of us, you know, and that's pretty much the norm.
Right.
But like there, you're really rich if you have a car.
Yeah.
Like we don't even think about that. And so many of us are like, oh my God, my car is so shitty, or oh, my car's back in the shop. And it's like, you have a car though. Like that is privilege. And that's where it all gets kind of lost. I mean, it's even bigger than white privilege is the whole point, you
right.
know? But I do think it's the big focus right now probably should be white people. And like you said, we're involved in that too, because we have been given things a little more easily.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my rant. Tell us about OnSite though. I'm like, so I haven't really, we kind of decompressed a smidge, but I was like, we're going to save it for the podcast. So give us the deets.
So I don't know if, did we tell people last week that's where I was going?
Yeah.
Okay. So I spent last Wednesday through Saturday at the most beautiful place in the world called OnSite. It's in a place called Cumberland Furnace, Tennessee. It's like an hour outside of Nashville. And it's this like old, big old mansion that they've added, not dorms, what would you call it? Cabins, mm-hmm. that sleep like 2 to 3 to 4 people, depending on what cabin you're in. And it was a program that was designed for music industry people. So there were like 45 of us there. It was called the Key of C, and I think it was like a play on the word centered.
Mm-hmm.
And it was about, the objective of the week was to sort of like us to digitally detox and to talk about sort of the effects that, you know, the loss that our industry has suffered during COVID. That was the intention, you know, but, I think that everyone went there with a little bit more baggage than just that, you know, as humans, it's like, of course. And I think that all of us were really hoping to get like the real deal, like on-site deep dive. This was designed a little different. Like normally, for their living centered programs, you would be in like you would have your group of eight with a therapist assigned to you the whole time, where you would do some larger group work and then you do your breakouts in your group. Ours was a little different. We would do like big group sort of like lectures, and then we would break into smaller groups, but you would change who your group was. So, I mean, it was like we talked about our family dynamics and, you know, addiction to cell phones and internet and those sorts of things. And by the way, they take your phone from you when you arrive, that you don't have a computer. The only way that people can reach you is an emergency phone number that's answered 24 hours a day. They will not confirm or deny whether you're there or not. So like, they'll be like, if you had called for me, they'd be like, we cannot confirm that Chip is neither here nor not here, mm-hmm. but what's the message? And they'll take a message. And if it's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're like, you know, I just peed my pants laughing and that's what you wanted to tell me, they would wake me up and tell me that.
Wow.
So there is, you're not completely cut off from the world, is what I'm saying. But my biggest fear going into it with knowing that it was like a bunch of music industry people was that it would be people that I just like knew but wasn't close with, and I would have to get really vulnerable around. Mm. Because you don't know what's going to come up, you know? I'm not going to say anybody's name because it's not fair to them, but there was a guy in my room. There, I had two roommates. One guy I'd never met or even heard of, and another guy like kind of knew just in passing. Like we would say hi to each other if we saw each other at a show, you know, but I didn't really know much about him except for like where he worked. And we ended up like creating this amazing bond. I said to him, it was like, and I was a little worried that it even came off like insulting. I was like, what a pleasant surprise. And it was less about like the surprise of like who he was, mm-hmm. but how I was surprised at like the wall that I had like sort of put up going into it, worried about people in his position and being like, wow, it was like really comfortable, like letting my guard down. Like we would get up and we'd go on early morning walks. And this is like, I would have never done this with this guy in Nashville, you know, left to my own devices. But now I would, you know, like feel like I know him. So it was like, so anyway, I won't go into like really specific stuff. I will tell you, putting my phone away, I was like, so literally the whole drive there, and this is going to sound really irresponsible, I was texting and responding to emails and calling people.
You were texting me, and I was like, oh my God, you're about to have to put your phone away.
Yeah, I had to like get like the last minute in. Yeah. And the sweetest thing, like the last text I got was from Lindsay, which, you know, in the work world, like she's a huge priority for me. Like I think about it from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed, like how can I serve her career, you know? Sure. And she had a lot of really big stuff going on while I was gone. And I was just, I wanted to make sure like nothing was going to fall through the cracks. But at a certain point, like it was out of my hands.
Sure.
And she, as I was pulling into the property, I got a text from her that was like, I'm so proud of you. Like, please let your guard down, be vulnerable, like make the most of your time. Like, and it was like, it kind of set me free. It was really nice. I was able to hand over my phone and know that like, let go and let God.
Yes.
So it doesn't take very long that you kind of forget about it. Mm-hmm. It was funny because everyone would have phantom vibrates.
Oh, yeah.
And the first time I left my cabin, I did the like phone, keys, wallet.
I'm like, wait a second.
I don't have any of those things.
Yeah.
But so back to my fear of like, you know, having to get vulnerable around people that I knew. So there were five people that I knew there. One of which, literally the guy lives across the street from me.
Oh, weird.
Like a few doors down. And I don't know him well. He's like new to the block. Oh, and we had to wear masks the whole time. Mm-hmm. And so people look really different with a mask on if you don't know them. Like if it's a friend, you can picture what their face looks like. But I was meeting a lot of these people for the first time with their mask. And then at dinner, when you're sitting down, you can take the mask off. And I'm like, oh,
yeah,
you're prettier than I thought.
Yeah.
You're more handsome than I thought, or whatever. But So this person came up to me, and when he saw my name, he was like, "Do you live across the street from me?" And I looked at his name, and I was like, "I sure do." But then there were four other people. One I knew pretty well, and the others were sort of like my roommate, where it was like surface. And I met this amazing woman. She was the first person that I met, and I ended up in a group with the four people that I knew and her. And it was, we were talking about these things called family sculpts, and it's where you take your idea of like the makeup of your family. So for me, it would be my mom, my dad, my sister, and me. And we would put it down on paper and draw circles that represented like the positioning. Like emotionally, I felt like I was closer to my mom than my dad, but my sister was like closer to my dad. So you put it on paper, and then you have to like explain it to your group and walk through those feelings. Mm. And all of us bawled when we did it. Like, I mean, it was like we really went deep on it. And I'm sitting there being like, fuck, this is literally my worst nightmare. But it was the most, you know, cathartic moment of the whole weekend.
Yeah.
And I feel like I will forever be tied to those people because of that moment. And so it was really interesting because it was really about the subject matter that like made it feel cathartic. But I was like, in hindsight, I was like, and I lived through that fear.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I am dying to go back. Like,
I loved that you said that. Yeah. That you wanted to go.
I want to go do the real like session. deep dive session. Because I feel like it was, we only really got to scratch the surface because of the way that the program was designed. We only had one therapist for all of us.
Yeah. So it's like shorter. But that's what I said to you. I think this was my response when you said this to me when you got out. But I was like, don't you feel like some of this stuff can be overwhelming to people a lot of times, especially because you don't know what to expect, yes, right? And so you're like, oh, I don't want to do that, or I don't need to do that. Or like you said, the second you guys start talking about family, you don't realize, regardless of if you hate your family, you're close with your family, everyone has family shit. You just do. It's where we get all of our programming from. And so like when someone brings it up and you ask yourself certain questions that you've never had to think about before, even if you're subconsciously operating from those places all the time, it can be so emotional, and you kind of start to recognize, oh, there might be more to this. Like, right. And so now you have the cool opportunity where you got to dip your toe in,
yes,
and you're like, I want more.
Yeah.
Which has been my experience with that kind of stuff as well. Because it can be really hard in the moment, but then the relief you feel when you walk through it is just something like I've never felt before.
Well, this is a takeaway that I'll share that's, I mean, I guess it's a fairly personal one. Like, one of the exercises we looked at, it's called like the Wheel of Feelings, I think, uh-huh, it was called. And apparently you can buy this online for like $1.
Okay.
And basically the center are like the core, I would have taken a picture of it, but I didn't have my phone. Are there like core, like main emotions, like anger, sadness, mm-hmm, happiness, joy. And then as like, it's got rings, like a rings of a tree. And then it's like, okay, these are some adjectives that describe that. And then as you get further to the outside of the circle, it is, I'll try and find one and we should post it so people can visualize
it. Sure.
When you get on the outside, it's like things you might be doing, like grinding your teeth, like clenching your fist, like
that,
like how they associate with those things. And I raised my hand and I was like, how come on that wheel, 75% of that are what I perceive to be negative emotions? And the therapist was like, well, what do you mean by negative? And I'm like, things that you're not supposed to feel. Like,
that's so fascinating.
And a guy in the class like raised his hand and he was like, I totally get what you're saying. But like, to me, happiness doesn't exist without sadness or fear 100%. Or anger. And like, you cannot approach, emotions are emotions and you should feel them. And the therapist said, a common mistake that parents make, and my mother makes this, to this day, she says this to me. Parents will say, all I care about is that my children are happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's this weird like programming thing where as children you learn, and as an adult, my mom still says, I'm like, hey mom, what do you want for Christmas? All I want are my children home and happy.
So you know? You don't feel like you could be anything but happy.
You feel like you are failing if you are not happy. And like when I heard that, I was like, I mean, you know me. Like, that's exactly where I live.
100%.
When was the last time you saw me really fucking angry or really sad? Never,
like, I literally don't think I've ever seen you
angry. I don't. Yeah. And that doesn't mean I don't feel anger.
I know.
But I said to the therapist, I was like, looking at all of these fucking words up there makes me realize that I don't know my feelings. I have a hard time identifying those feelings.
Totally. I think boys specifically have a harder programming to that. Right. Like, y'all get it beat into, from my experience with men, it's really something that, like, I feel sorry for guys on, is that they are basically conditioned to think that you can be happy or you can be mad. But, like, don't be sad, don't be weak, don't be any of the other things that are uncomfortable for other people to experience when you're supposed to be the strong man,
right?
You know, which is such a fucking facade, because the strongest men feel all their feelings in my experience. And I think it's really rare.
Well, Miles Adcox, who runs the place, owns the place.
Yeah.
He wasn't supposed to speak, but someone got sick. So he came in the day after his vacation.
Yeah.
And he told this story of his kid had to go to school. And it's his first time going to school. Mm-hmm. You know, it's three, I think.
Oh yeah.
Three or four. And so, you know, he was like, we had to, like, get him used to wearing a mask. And it was like, you know, you wear it for 5 minutes one day, 15 minutes. And, like, now he's like, my kid, like, loves wearing his mask, and he's better about it than adults. But he was like, I sat in the back seat. My wife was driving, and we, like, drive to the drop off. Mm-hmm. And his kid said, Daddy, I'm really scared. And Miles said to him, do you know that it's possible to be scared and brave at the same time? And he said, yes. And then he looked at me and he said, will you be scared and brave with me right now? And they both cried. I'm going to cry even saying it.
Me too.
They both cried. And it's like such a, like, an amazing, like, of course you can be brave and scared. Like, in fact, like, you have to be brave to be scared, right? You have to be brave to say that you're scared.
Well, it's not, that's what they say. Courage isn't the absence of fear.
Right.
It's just taking the step anyway.
Right.
Even when you feel scared.
Yeah.
Which, God, why don't we start conditioning ourselves to think that and feel the feelings of whatever it is. But feelings are uncomfortable, especially when you haven't been trained that they're okay. And so what an amazing realization you had, though. Like, that is literally such a gift.
Yeah.
That's like, even if you walked away with nothing else, what a great gift.
Yeah,
that
I can remember as a kid, like, I lived in my feelings. Like, I would see a dog hit on the side of the road, and I would, like, fucking lose it. Like, and my parents were never like, boys don't cry. Like, they, but at some point, and it was probably when I realized I was gay and I had to start, like, shielding myself.
Yeah.
I started swallowing my feelings. And, but, like, there are, you know, probably most households with boys, like, you're told not to cry. You're like, you got to be tough. You're a man, you know? And it's like, that makes kids feel small. You know, you grow up being like, you making yourself feel small. And it's like, I referenced, you know, I don't have children, so I don't have experience of child rearing, you know, but I get to witness it. And our friend Mary, I think, is an awesome mom. And I see how she addresses her kid when she's having emotional moments.
Yeah.
And she makes her talk about it. She's like,
totally.
What's going on? Let's talk about it. Like, what are you feeling right now? Oh, are you sad? Okay. Well,
yeah.
Let's be sad. That's cool. And like, it's so awesome to witness that. And I think it's like, it's also, we've evolved. Like, we're a different generation. It was so interesting to see that, like, basically everyone said that they grew up in a house where no one showed emotions.
Mm.
And I think it was just a sign of the times.
I think that's right.
Yeah. And I think it's
changing.
Just getting better.
It's shifting.
Yeah.
I just think too, parents, I mean, that's the hardest job there is, in my opinion. And even when you're trying to give your kid a positive reinforcement, like, my parents would always say to me, you are such a joy. Like, because I was really happy as a kid. And as I got older, and like, I am double water sign for any of my astrology people out there that haven't heard me say that. And so I feel the wave of all the emotions. And I'm just now at the age of 39 starting to be like, wait, this isn't, I've always thought of it as like a hindrance to my success or, you know, anything. Cause I'm just can be all over the place. But
too many
really,
feels.
Yeah, but like as I'm learning to navigate that more and I'm surrounding myself with people who accept me and my emotions, like, and I can look at it more as like, oh no, this is a superpower because I can be available to people in all these ways and all of these things. But anyway, when they used to say that, it was the same thing for me.
Right.
Of like, you can't be anything but. And so I became a really big people pleaser.
Yeah.
And I still can go into that. But luckily, because I am so fucking emotional, there's been moments in my life where I'm like, I don't want to be a fucking joy. You know, like,
yeah.
And my anger will come out because I can't help myself. You know, it's like
right.
My emotions overtake anything that I can control most of the time. But so anyway, I just think it's like, it's a hard thing as parents because they were trying to be positive to me as like, we just love you so much and you're such a joy. We're so grateful you're our daughter and we feel like it's such a gift, you know, all of that stuff. And we had to really work through them not saying that to me anymore and that's in that same capacity,
right.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah, it's tough because it's like, you don't, I know, like I've never felt anything but loved by my parents.
Yes.
You know?
Same.
But they are at their, there are mistakes that they made naturally.
All parents
yeah.
do.
So it, I think part of the struggle is like, it's not, blame isn't the right, even though it feels like blame. Basically, it's more of like finding the courage just to communicate and set boundaries. And
yeah. You can't do anything different until you're aware, right? And
right.
Like, that's the other thing with my parents. Without like me looking at the stuff that affected me, I would never be able to heal from it. But you're like you said, I don't have to sit here and be mad and blame and all that stuff. Like maybe that's a part of the process at some points, but like, everybody is genuinely doing the best they can at any given time. I do believe that.
Yeah.
And especially our parents, you know, like with the tools they had at the time.
Like, totally.
I'm lucky that my parents have evolved and grown through the years too. So I can see the change in them, which has probably been one of the driving forces in me constantly wanting to like grow and be self-aware and look at how I can be better in relationship versus just getting stuck and being like stubborn in that, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's been acceptable in my family.
And for me too, it's like part of me wanted to come out of that and be like, let's dive into this with your parents and like start fixing shit. And I was like, pump the brakes, bitch. Like,
right.
Focus more on, like you said, you cannot change things until you're aware of it. But you also can't, my job is not to fix my parents.
No.
My job is to fix me. And in doing so, set the boundaries that say, this is how I'm going to exist. And if you want to participate in my life, this is the space that you get to fill.
Absolutely.
And then they can choose to change or not to like fit into my life.
Right.
And but the truth is like because I've put up all of these walls, like I don't give them the space to truly be in my life. And so I need to work that bullshit out to like let them in before I like go at them and be like, look at all the fucked up shit
look
you
how
did.
Fucked up you are. Look how fucked up
because
you made
me.
Because
I was a participant in it too.
Of course.
Yeah.
Well, as an adult, we all are. Right. And that's been like the biggest thing of me not being able to blame is like, okay, no, it's actually now it's time for me to take responsibility for my own actions at this point because I'm 39.
Right.
So, like, it's not my mother's fault that
right.
I do X, Y, and Z. It's not my dad's fault that I do X, Y, and Z. It's now on me.
And
so,
inaction is an action when it comes to work.
That's true.
Like this.
Yeah.
Like, not doing anything isn't helping anything.
No.
So, you know, it's, look, we're ever evolving creatures and it feels like an insurmountable hill to climb. This was another major takeaway. They have a 2% change rule. So they, like, the example that the therapist gave was, he was like, I was vegan once and it was the hardest 38 hours of my life. and he was like, you know, like we tend to like make these massive decisions. Yeah. Like I'm going to do this and I'm going to go all in, I'm going to do it. And then we fail.
Yeah.
And the way that they showed a visual example is if a plane takes off from Boston, a round trip flight, and flies to Los Angeles, if they're off course by 2%, when they come back, they land in New York City.
Oh my God.
So it's a big, over a lot of time, over an amount of time, 2% can affect great change.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than trying to like change 100% of things, go in at 2%. Give yourself the grace to take a little bit of time and make small changes that in the long run will make great change in your life.
Well, that's why in 12-step they say one day at a time.
One day
right?
at a time.
Like, and that's like a big thing I know I've heard about in AA. They say you know, the first 3 months, like you're going to be in this pink cloud because you all of a sudden have these new awarenesses and you just want to go tell the world. You're like,
right.
Oh my God, listen to this. And it's like exciting. Right. And then the reality sets in of like, oh, this is how I have to live the rest of my life. And
right.
like you bump up against hard things in your life and you're like, oh, I want to grab a drink or whatever your drug of choice is. This is for all of them. But like, yeah, that's why they say like, it's more about over time consistency and you can always slip. So
yeah,
it's
little
like,
and do little things
just literally one day at a time.
I'll tell you the two things that hours. I decided the 2% changes that I'm doing. I'm never going through a drive through again.
Oh,
so I'm not saying I'm like won't eat fast food.
Okay,
but I'm not going to go through a drive through
okay,
because it's a slippery slope and next thing you know you're fucking going through the drive through all the
time. These are good boundaries for so like you're setting for yourself. Yeah.
I'm not going to go through a drive through and I've got a little yellow notebook right here.
Okay.
We are all very addicted to our phones.
Yes.
Like there's no doubt about it. I have learned in the days since, now that I'm back at work, like it's nearly impossible. It's like I can't throw this thing away. Like
no.
Addiction aside, like it is impossible for me to do my job without
right.
it. But what it is not impossible to do is when I'm with a friend and we're connecting on a real level, I don't need this to communicate and
yeah.
operate. So if like we're talking about something and I'm guilty of this, like say we're talking about White Lotus and we're like, what's that actor's name? Oh,
You'll
I don't
Google
know.
It.
I'll Google it. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, I'm answering texts. I'm looking at Instagram and I'm not
in
the
moment. Susan knows. You're
so,
talking to
I know.
Susan.
So
Susan is
I have
be
this
so
book.
Happy.
I have this book now. So when okay. a moment like that arises, I'll write it down.
Okay.
Yes. It will take me out of the moment for a second, but there's nothing in this book that's going to like keep me in the book.
Right, you won't get distracted.
I won't
about
get
all
distracted by
stuff.
Anything. So when I get home, I can look it up and text you the name of the actor.
Okay, I
so
see. I like
you,
these.
I mean, I will tell
things.
You, it's a little annoying to have to carry this book around, but it's small. It's like the size of a, you know, an Android probably.
Shots fired, man. Shots fired.
Susan.
Well, I want to kind of touch on, I mean, we went 40 minutes
yeah.
on our...
We might not even need our topic.
I know. Well, I think it's kind of relevant to what you were just saying about the phones because we were literally sitting here talking about a topic or all day. We have been going back and forth and back and forth. And I just said to you, I'm like, I can't think of anything that isn't dark right now because of the oversaturation of negative news. And you were like... Well, you said two things. You said, well, I haven't read the news in a week. And then I thought that was great. But then you also said that all of the stuff that you just told us about OnSite, you're like, well, it was gone in 2 days because I just got thrown back in.
Right.
And it's not gone. Obviously,
right.
you just touched base with all of it. But I think it's interesting, our oversaturation because of our phones and all of this stuff and all of the negative news, how we can maintain our mental health. And that's what you and I wanted to talk about a little bit. And I think it actually transitions perfectly from OnSite.
Right,
like it's
yeah.
just like you had this amazing experience, then you get thrown back into the world again. And it's like, oh shit, here I am. And here's all the chaos, all of the like boundaryless stuff that I used to do. How do you maintain the good stuff you learned in OnSite with all of that just thrown back at you? You know, it's so easy to just fall back into the trap.
Yeah. I mean, I think for my little 2% changes, like I'm going to,
yeah.
I'm going to unsubscribe from every like newsletter that I get.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have it coming at me. Like, I feel like there is a time and a place for news and, you know, I feel like I got into it because I felt like I always needed to have something to talk about with somebody. Mm-hmm. I needed to be informed on things. But I got to tell you, like, I haven't missed... And I know it became like a reflex. Like, mm-hmm. when I was had a moment of like, okay, I need to turn my brain off for a second, I would just type CNN. Like, expecting there to be probably some big bad news story...
Right.
...that I could sort of, like, distract myself with. And I have not missed... looking up news at all. I haven't felt uninformed. And I feel like I've been like all my conversations with my friends have been like so much more on a human level than being like, hey, let's talk about, you know, that building that caved in Florida. You know what I mean? It's like, because that, even though it's incredibly sad and it's so tragic, like it had nothing to do with me.
Right.
You know? So to give that space in my life and my mind and Surely it was causing stress. It's bad news can't be good for you. You know, it's that stuff is unhealthy. So, you know, look, I know it's there's a lot of gray area and it's a fine line to walk because there are injustices happening in the world that I want to be informed about and I want to stand up for the people that are, you know, on the wrong side of the injustice. Yeah. You know, but I also cannot carry the weight of everyone's problems on my shoulders.
Well, I think it's so interesting what you said when you're like, I mean, that doesn't affect me, that like the Florida building or whatever. And that is actually a mentality I'm trying to change within myself because I think that I got really accustomed to only focusing on the tragic things that affected me. And then like I recently kind of got triggered back into some stuff because the hurricane that hit Louisiana and then New York and New Jersey and all that stuff and watching people lose their houses to floods. My grandparents lost their house a couple years ago and nobody was talking about it. And I remember being like, oh my God, you don't realize either. Like when you lose your house in a flood or like a tornado or things like that, like losing everything, you don't realize what that feels like. Like I remember just going through stuff that I had seen my entire life and it was just drenched and like they didn't have any clothes. Like they didn't have fucking toothbrushes. Like you don't realize the safety that your home gives us, you know? And that's like another privilege that we, most of us have is to have a roof over our head. And so I have consciously been trying to pay more attention to all the things, even the things that like are not in my day to day, they affect me life, you know, that's like one of my, I don't know if it's like an amends I'm trying to make or if it's just something I'm trying to do to be better. But in the same vein, I have been honestly borderline depressed for a really like about a year and a half now. And like, I'm really having to come to terms with that and how it's affected my life, my creativity, myself, and just like, my joy that I bring to people, like my parents, like they probably couldn't say that to me all the time now, you know, because I just feel like I'm walking around with a cloud over my head, like waiting for the next shoe to drop because the shoe fucking dropped, you know, like my world felt like it just completely disappeared. And I'm sure that's why they're even doing the thing at OnSite that they were doing. Like it was just like this collective trauma happening and there wasn't really anywhere to turn for people to support you fully because everyone was going through something. And it hasn't just been the music business disappearing or COVID in general, or it's been all the things. Like, I just feel like our world is getting turned upside down for a bigger spiritual purpose right now. But I think that I'm realizing the impact that just like kind of deep diving on the news every day. So I do feel informed and I can have the conversations, or because of my job, I feel like it's important not to live in the dark. But the effect that's having on my mental health. Yeah. And so then it's sort of in the same vein that you're saying, like, I don't think that we have the capacity to carry it all the time.
Right.
So anyway, I found an article because I was like, okay, well, what are we going to actually talk about? But we're bumping up against reality when we can't find a fucking topic to make people laugh. Like we're like, you want to talk about abortion? Yeah, that's not funny. But there is a fine line too of the responsibility of talking about the real shit happening versus like living in the fluff world of fake social media world. So,
well, the conversations around abortion in particular, what's going on in Texas that I do find humor in is like when people fucking nail it on memes, you know, like
I know, there's so many memes.
There's so many good ones that just like,
thank God
show
for memes.
Like
I don't know if I would have survived.
I know.
Like truly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I could get real dark on that topic. I've gotten in multiple fights on my Instagram the last week over that topic. Cause I just have very strong feelings about it. But, let's not go there today.
Yeah, let's not go there today.
Anyway, I found this article on Very Well Mind and it was like, is watching the news bad for mental health? And they're like, yes. Essentially, yes. And it's like, obviously, anxiety and depression has gone up immensely in 2020 because of all the pandemic stuff happening. But a lot of that is because we're over consuming the news all the time. And yeah, I don't think that that means don't watch the news ever. But basically, this article talks about how it impacts your mental health, but then also like how you can manage it. Because like you said, we want to be informed. We don't want to be in the dark on these certain topics. We want to be able to make informed decisions about these serious things happening in our personal, like that are affecting us personally and in our lives. And how do we do that? And so one of the things they said in here was limit your time each day. which I thought was really good. They say like 30 minutes, less than 30 minutes of social media scrolling is probably the best. And I was like, what?
Oh, I'm going to take social media off my phone, I think.
I don't blame you. If I could, I would. I'm to that point.
Yeah.
Don't leave your television or your news stream on. Like, and we do that all the time in the house.
Don't.
Like, it's just on in the background sometimes. And I don't realize the negativity happening, but we were even driving the other day and like NPR was on. It was like in the morning, you know, you're just like trying to catch up on this stuff. And then I realized, oh my God, I've been in a terrible mood all day. Cause that's how I started my morning.
Yeah. You start with the negativity.
Then it says schedule a worry time, which I thought was really good. Cause I will like find myself doing it all day. But if you say like, I've heard people talk about this with grief. Well, you get 15 minutes of this day to cry. And like, that's a really harsh one. And I don't think that that always works, but like kind of scheduling the time so that then it's like, okay, time is up. Okay. What am I going to do to get myself out of this and go be positive? So scheduling worry time, gauge how you feel before watching. Like we just mindlessly pick up our phone. Yes.
Yeah.
And like either start watching the news or scrolling through our phones, like on Twitter, like reading the trending topics or whatever. And like, if you're already in kind of a dark place, that's not the best thing to do, you know,
no.
Like kind of like if you're already feeling pessimistic or anxious or angry, even probably not the thing to do is go pick up your phone. Cause it's just going to exacerbate all those feelings. Watch reliable news outlets. That's a big one. I think people have a lot of debates on what those are, but it's about figuring out which news outlets you believe and buy into, and then kind of sticking with that and not like, I don't know. That one's a tough one.
It's a tough one because I've heard not to stick with one because it becomes an echo chamber.
Well, I don't think I mean like stick with CNN or Fox News.
Right.
Do you know what I'm saying? Because those are very obviously one-sided.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Right.
And I mean, I watch one of them, but
I'm like,
even
this
habits, is skewed.
Especially if you're looking at it online. Reading. They learn like what kind of articles you like, and it's served. They tend to serve, the algorithm will serve you things that like fit what you seem to, and the computer thinks you enjoy.
Yeah.
So it becomes a weird echo chamber.
So then you're going to get more of the same.
Yeah.
I can't stand when people are like, well, coronavirus isn't real. It's only because you watch that one network. And I'm like, or is it because you only watch the other network?
Right, yeah.
But it's like, it's just like,
I would argue that the 600,000 dead people in our country would tell you it's very real. Well, you know, like.
I mean, obviously people know where we stand on this topic. But I mean, you do have to be able to make informed decisions. Like, you need to have the facts about the vaccine and all that stuff. But like, again, you were like, well, my doctor gave me the facts, not CNN.
Yeah, I like, didn't choose it because of news.
I personally like the skim because they kind of have like the top bullet points and they keep things a little bit lighter most of the time. Or like, and I know that sounds really like,
I forgot about the skim.
Oh, I love the skim because it's, and I try not to read it in the mornings anymore because I don't like to, I need to do my like quiet time and meditation instead. But it gives you the bullet points and it's like they're funny and clever. And so it's not so doomsday feeling.
Right.
But things like that, that you pick a certain avenue that works for you and then maybe stick to like one or two of those things and don't oversaturate yourself all the time. This one says subscribe to a newsletter podcast. So kind of in the same vein of what I was saying. And then I love this, recite a helpful mantra. Like they said, toxic disaster reporting has no power over me. And a lot of people might be like, oh, woo woo, figure out what works for you. But like, it's the same thing as checking, engaging what you feel before you go read it.
Right.
You know, limit your exposure to other stressors, do something healthy after watching the news, go for a walk, things like that. And then if you get a little dark and you need to get it out, find a therapist and talk about it.
Because
right. I do think these times are like really, really hard on that. Like, I mean, the fact that we sat all day and I was just like, yeah, this isn't hitting. This isn't it. Because all the fluff stuff almost seems silly.
Right.
But then like, I want to like bring people joy on a Friday morning and not be like one of the same of doomsday.
There you are, bringing your joy.
Bringing my fucking joy, Mom. I'm just kidding.
Something that I thought was interesting too, because when I started to like research this particular topic was that it was really hard to find a legitimate news source that would tell you not to read the news.
Wait, what? Oh, yeah.
It was mostly like opinion pieces on Medium or like weird blogs I'd never heard of.
Verywellmind.com.
Right. But I did find this one's a little old, so I'll skip the stuff that's like irrelevant to like the cell phone usage and stuff that's interesting. Because this was written in 2013. But it's still, I think these things like, it's from The Guardian, which is a British publication. And the headline is "News is bad for you, and giving up reading it will make you happier," which I think is really funny.
100% believe that.
Coming from a media outlet, like, right? And a legitimate media
They're
outlet.
They're like, "Read us, but don't read us, because you'll get depressed."
And some of the things that, like, I think these points are really relevant today. It says, "News is toxic to your body. It contains triggers. It constantly triggers the limbic system. Panicky stories spur the cascades of cortisol." This deregulates your immune system and inhibits the release of growth hormones. In other words, your body finds itself in a state of chronic stress.
Yeah,
so it's like it can cause you to lose your hair, impaired digestion, like crazy shit. It also says the news works like a drug. A story, as stories develop, we want to know how they continue. So like when you think about that, like, the constant feed. And like, I know that's why I was going back. Like, well, now how many bodies have been found? And how many bodies have been found?
Too,
and it's like,
too.
News wastes your time. And it says, like, if you might read it 15 minutes in the morning, 15 minutes before bed, 15 minutes at lunch. Next thing you know, you're reading 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 5 minutes. And an hour of your day has literally been wasted just reading news.
Yeah.
It makes you passive. News stories are overwhelmingly about things that you cannot influence. The daily repetition of news about things that we can't act upon makes us passive because we're just observers at that point. You know, you were talking about, like, I forget the exact point that you made, but it was like, I mean, honestly, bad news is great for business. Yes. We love to tell bad news. It hooks us. I was talking about clickbait. Yeah, it's clickbait. It's like headline grabbing. But like, you were talking about the floods, and it's like, quite honestly, like, the floods did not affect me. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't. They were close by, the ones that in Nashville.
Yes.
And I do think that the news needs to figure out a way to be more compassionate, because those people need help.
Right.
But they should not be a source of drama for us.
Right.
Because it does get dramatized. Like, I find myself, I want to look at the disaster photos.
Yeah.
That does nothing. Like, basically what it should be is real human stories of, like, this is what I lost, this is what I need, and not just like this clickbaity thing. So how can we still be informed so that those people aren't forgotten? But it's not about, like, bastardizing their story, you know? And I feel like the news media on both sides of the aisle benefit from bastardizing and, like, dramatizing these stories.
I mean, that is such a big example of human conditioning, like, all of it. I mean, think about my experience of being in the news and how I was so fucking devastated. Like, it was so terrible for me on all levels, and it was like complete character assassination, all this stuff. And people were more interested in that than actually the truth, because they wanted the sensationalized,
absolutely,
like, false story, because it was more interesting.
Right.
You know, like, whatever. And it just wasn't even fucking true.
Right.
So it was the most devastating experience of the human condition to me to watch people thrive off of hating on me.
Right.
For something that never even happened.
Yeah. And it's like, there are master media manipulators out there.
Oh my God.
You know?
They're
like,
fucking lying half the time.
It doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't matter.
All
because
those tablets,
if the people that are consuming it want to believe it,
that's it.
That's their truth.
Oh, I still get people saying shit to me like that. And I'm like, you do know this isn't true, right? Like, I'm getting so, and I'm like, are we still fucking talking about this?
Yeah.
Like, it never happened. But I mean, I do think, like, the actual news places, not the TMZs or like the tabloid shit, have a responsibility to deliver real information, and they sensationalize a lot of it. But, you know, it's such a fine line. Like,
right.
I don't want to get into those battles of people being like, this is what we're saying, blah, blah, blah.
I'll give you a real life example, and I wish I could quote it perfect. Actually, I might be able to.
There he goes, getting distracted on his computer.
Well, it's because I want to quote it directly, but
okay.
When obviously we talk about Lindsay L. I work with Lindsay L. When we put out this her last record, she shared a story about being sexually assaulted when she was 13 and 20. And it came out online first, and then it was on people.com, and then it was in print, a beautiful like print story that was longer. So the editorial was a little different. And the headline online was "Country Star Admits to Being Raped" or something like that.
It's like brutal.
And the headline in print was like Lindsay L's struggle through sexual assault into like, it was like very like fluffy and positive. Yeah. It was like really positive.
Right.
Like finds how her she strength through tragedy. Struggle or whatever. Yes. And it was just like, wait, why are these headlines different? Because they want fucking clicks.
That's they want
they
the
want. Pass along. They want those things. And it's like, it's still told the same story, you know? But it was to get someone's attention. Once they've sold you the magazine, they've sold you the magazine. Like they probably want, I would imagine that the reader of a People magazine is either a casual reader in like a doctor's office, or they're probably a little bit older and they don't want a lot of negativity. Like they don't want that drama.
I think people are just
passing
scrolling.
It along online. Yeah. Like, passing it online and like posting it on Facebook and shit. What gets a click, but like something that sounds fucking terrible.
Oh, mine was all Kristen Cavallari's ex-best friend accused of affair with current husband or whatever. And then it's like, you go into the article and it's like, well, Kristen admits this never happened. And I'm like,
you're right.
Okay.
Thanks. Why not lead with, Kristen knows it's not true.
How about Kristen's a fucking liar? Right. Sorry. Whoops. Sometimes the anger still comes out.
Maybe she's not anymore.
We'll just give her the benefit
compassion.
Of the doubt.
We'll be compassionate. But yeah.
Anyway. Yeah. I just think it's like we do have to be careful what we're consuming. And it's super important to pick, you know, like outlets that you trust and believe in. And also read the facts. If you're going to like get into the science behind things like we always talk about, or just not like skimming the headline and like read the real article, but also be aware of what you're consuming for your own mental health. Like I think the whole point of this whole statement was just it was just like, really, let's pay more attention to the importance of our mental health, because as you experienced this weekend, there's stuff that you weren't even aware of. Like I have that awareness happening to me a lot lately too, and it's just like, we are all in a collective trauma still. I really do believe that. And so take care of yourselves, you guys.
Yeah.
That's the moral of our story. Okay, I'm just going to do one listener email because we are like super short on time today. This one comes from Jocelyn. She says, I love that y'all talk about the tough stuff. Just wanted to comment on your talk about sexualization. If you want to show your body in a bikini because you think you look good and you feel good, do it. But be transparent. Write a caption that is rooted in empowerment, like, damn, I feel good, instead of a caption that baits compliments like, ooh, I'm such a bloated whale, knowing people will tell you the contrary and leave you a bunch of fire and emoji hearts. Heart emojis, excuse me. I think it's dangerous differentiating between when it comes from a place of having confidence versus a place of craving validation. And I think the danger increases when people chase that validation and start to think that they are entitled, which is when they lose sight of the collective and start only consider individual wants. I saw a TikTok of a mom who said she was sick of people telling her to stop wearing a thong bikini to her family water park. She commented that she has sons and they see her dress this way all the time, and added that kids will eventually see things anyway. I do not think there is anything wrong with sex because I think it is a natural part of life, but I will not be having sex in front of a kid anytime soon. Have you ever seen, there's that clip, I think it's, sorry, this is a side tangent, but it just went through my head. I think it's Kenny Powers and it's Will Ferrell's character. And they talk about the son walking in. The mom goes, oh my God, our son just saw us have sex. And he goes, let him watch. So messed up. Okay. Maybe that's an extreme example, but all to say that people are no longer inclined to use discretion and forgetting that maybe there are certain things that are meant for certain time and place. Anyway, that was from Jocelyn. This is that big debate that I brought up about, like, am I playing into the over-sexualization that came from the patriarchy? Am I, like, doing what I do because I have, you know, collaborations with certain companies and it's a part of my business to do fashion stuff? What? And we talked about it being about the intention. I think she agrees with this.
Yeah, I agree with her. I think it's like, I mean, there's an Instagram account that's like, it's something like, it's got the word caption in it. It's about like ludicrous captions or whatever.
Yeah,
and it's like, where it's like a girl or a guy who's like scantily clad and they're like, just I'm really worried about climate change. Well, it's like, I think it's irrelevant caption.
Yeah.
And it's like, what, you're sitting on, like, you're naked in Bali.
Right.
Like, what are you so worried about?
Right.
You know?
It's tough. I mean, I think that the influencer game has changed. I know, like, I've dealt with that too. Like, it has shifted greatly. And so everyone's kind of trying to navigate because that is what was working for a long time.
Yeah.
Like,
because no one was reading the captions.
No one was really.
People that were like calling him out for it.
Well, and also nobody was really talking about deep stuff.
Right.
Like that has really shifted on Instagram, I think, specifically. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I don't know the answer, but I do think having an awareness again is the big thing. But also like asking yourself, like, what is my intention?
Right.
And is it just like, yeah, I feel great today. And like, look how cute the suit is or whatever it is. Like, I don't know. It could just be that you feel good and you're feeling yourself.
Yeah.
But just own it. Yeah.
You got to own it.
Anyway, we threw a lot at you guys today.
I feel good about it though. Like,
you feel good? Well, damn, you feel good?
I feel like I came into this a little worried that like we had no idea what we were going to talk about and it like flowed out and felt really sincere and...
Well, you guys let us know if you feel the same. I hope you do.
I mean, should I make a dog fart noise or something? Like light in the mood, like...
like a hot one. Why do you always gotta go to the hot ones?
Well, yeah, it's the hot ones.
They're so like puffy.
Yeah, that's what they are.
I can smell one right now. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great rest of your Friday. Thanks for listening to all of our different topics, and I hope that y'all got something out of it. Take care of yourselves. I think that's our big thing. And also, when you go into your weekend and you're acting casual, let me start over. When you go into your weekend and you're living on the edge, take care of your mental health and always remember to
act casual.
Close.
Bye.
Bye.